Angel Spit!
Hey, this is Zeus Von Ruff from Angel Spit, and you are listening to WMUC-FM, College Park.
From the Blue Ridge to the Bay, it's Watershed. Increasingly, the term factory farm is used to describe new large-scale animal production in the watershed. But what does this term mean? Factory farms treat animals as if they were factory products. This system standardizes meat products by genetically manipulating animals, then concentrates them in large-scale industrial barns and speeds up their growth with antibiotic and heavy metal additives. These industrial facilities produce enormous amounts of waste. The chicken factory farms on the Delmarva Peninsula produce 400,000 tons of manure annually. But unlike factories in other industries, factory farms have no wastewater treatment plants.
Watershed is a presentation of the Maryland chapter of the Sierra Club. For more information, call
012-777-1111.
Welcome in. You are listening to WMUC-FM Radio here in College Park. I am your host, Jack Wynn, and you're listening to Winning Time. This is one of your favorite sports talk shows at College Park. It's been a minute since we've been on air, but, you know, consider it a feature appearance. And we've got a lot to talk about. Some seriously major sports moments happening within this past week. We're going to talk about all of it. We've got one of my favorite weeks of the NFL schedule coming up, not just because it's week 15, but because we've got a lot of really great games. And I'm excited to see how it turns out. I'm excited to talk about it, predict it. And we're going to do it all right here. But first, quick message from, you know, the good people over here at campus.
Campus Pantry is a free resource available for all UMD students, faculty, and staff experiencing food insecurity. It is open 5 days a week from 10 to 5 and is located on the ground floor of the South Campus Dining Building, next to the Common Shop. You must swipe your university ID before entering and check out before leaving. Make sure to bring your own reusable bag. For more information, you can visit the UMD Campus Pantry website at campuspantry.umd.edu. That's campuspantry.umd.edu.
All right. Gotta take care of the campus pantry. Always helpful. So, we have got a lot to talk about. We're going to start with a really historic moment in sports history that happened just a few days ago. LeBron's double-digit point streak has officially come to an end. Now, those of you who, you know, have listened to the show before, you know I'm quite fond of LeBron James. I think he's the greatest basketball player that's ever played, but that's not a conversation for right now, because this is just about the streak. This is about a moment in time that represents LeBron James's entire career. So, if there are two things we know about LeBron, it's that his longevity is unmatched, and his decision-making to make the right play is unique to no other superstar in NBA history of his caliber. I want to put this streak in context, because it really is unbelievable. He had gone 1,297 regular season games in a row, scoring at least 10 points. Because when you think of it on its face, scoring 10 points in a game, not very difficult, especially for these all-time great players. You know, LeBron averages nearly 30 points for his career. It's 27.2, I believe. Scoring 10 in a game is not a huge deal. However, doing it 1,297 games in a row certainly is. For context, just to like put this up for comparison, only 24 players in NBA history have even played that long, even played that many games. Shaquille O'Neal played from 1992 to 2011. He didn't even play in 1,297 games. That's how long this streak has been. The last time LeBron scored less than 10 points in a game was January 2007. His son Bronny, who now plays with him on the Lakers, was 2 years old. The iPhone didn't even exist yet. So this streak is truly unbelievable. And I think it had to end eventually. You know, we've seen LeBron getting older, but as he gets older, he also gets wiser. And as I said at the top of the show, if there are two things we know about LeBron, it's that his longevity is unmatched, as I've shown you, and that his decision-making when it comes to making the right play is unique to any superstar in history. Because he had the ball, tie game, with a chance to win it and extend the streak while doing so. And instead of taking that shot, he passed it to a wide-open teammate who got the game winner. That is a microcosm of LeBron's entire career. If there was a way for this streak to end, this was the best way for it to happen. With LeBron making the choice, as he has time and time again, and has gotten criticized for it, by the way, passing to the open teammate and making the right play. I think it's such a fascinating conversation because you have a lot of people who say, look, I would rather have LeBron James taking a difficult shot than Rui Hachimura taking a wide open shot. And I do understand that argument. It's why people say, you know, his style isn't always the best. But that's LeBron's style because he trusts his teammates. He understands that basketball is a team game. It's why he has maybe the greatest mind that this game has ever seen, especially with how much he has grown and how much he's accomplished. Anyway, the Lakers obviously got another win with that game winner, extended their, you know, stretch of great play to winning 15 out of 17 games. Austin Reeves has been unbelievable over this stretch. Luka's been a bit banged up. He's coming back soon. And the Lakers are really live right now in the West and in this league. When you have two players in LeBron and Luka who understand the game as well as they do, can create plays not just for themselves but for others as well as they do, it makes things unbelievably difficult on opponents. And we saw it last year after the Luka trade. Granted, they didn't have an offseason. They didn't have the chance to get situated. There was a lot going on. But we saw the potential of what this offense could look like. And now with Austin Reeves seemingly taking yet another leap as the third offensive option, who has a lot of the playmaking abilities that we see in LeBron and Luka, that just makes this team that much harder to play against. Now, the big question is going to be defense. When we get to the end of the season, when we get to the playoffs, when they're taking on the best teams in the league, are the Lakers going to be able to guard? And that's going to be a big question. I think they're going to get a bump from LeBron because it's clear at this point that LeBron has embraced, you know, being the second or even the third option on offense and just trying to do everything else he can, creating shots, rebounding, you know, team defense. And last year, after the Luka trade, LeBron became a much better defender. So there is potential for this team. There are a lot of really great teams out there in the West. It's going to be difficult for them really to, you know, get the edge. But this Lakers team is absolutely live. Every game that LeBron plays, you have to appreciate because there are so many rumors about his retirement. I really don't think he's going to retire. I think it would have been, you know, made too big of a deal. He's probably going to announce it before. If there's one thing we know about these all-time legends, it's that they value not just what they've accomplished in their careers, but they value the fans. And LeBron would want to give the fans a chance to see him play one last time. I just believe that. But that's enough basketball for now. We'll come back. We've got some other big stories coming. But there was another big game this week. The Lions and the Cowboys had one of the most entertaining Thursday night games we've seen in a while. They really got to fix the primetime schedule, man. I got to tell you, the NFL, they got to be a little less strict on the flexing games because, you know, it's working this week. They flexed Chiefs-Texans to Sunday night. Obviously, we had Lions-Cowboys on Thursday. But some of these primetime games this year, man, just haven't been really good quality football. But this game was Lions win, scoring over 40 points despite the Cowboys' high offensive output as well, 44-30. And I want to start with the Cowboys because it was a fun game. It was a great game. It was entertaining, but it was a bit of a microcosm of the Cowboys season. And that's because, once again, we saw the offense look unbelievable. We saw the ceiling with the offense, and the defense fell apart. And I want to talk about that defense falling apart real quick before I move back to the offense. Because, you know, it's easy for some people to come on and say, oh, this is because of the Micah trade. You know, if you had Micah, this wouldn't have happened. And that's a simplistic way of looking at it, but it's based in truth. And here's what I want to explain about that. This Cowboys defense is not supposed to be bad. Let me explain. When the Cowboys traded Micah Parsons, they got back multiple picks and a defensive lineman. They then used those picks that they acquired to trade for Quinnen Williams, the star young defensive lineman from the Jets. That means they're running pretty dry on those assets that they got out of the Micah trade, which means what you're seeing is what you're going to get. Quinnen Williams, Kenny Clark, and a second-round pick in like a year or two is all that's left of the Micah trade. And I don't see how the Cowboys are going to recover from this, because it's clear at this point, even stacking the line with talent, even trying to establish an identity of stopping the run, is not working. The defense still looks terrible, as they did right after the Micah trade. So if the Cowboys, the Quinnen Williams trade is really the thing that stands out, because he is supposed to make up for the gap that they lost with Micah because of what they traded a first and a second for him. You should be getting more output on the defensive end. And for the Lions to just run roughshod all over them, for Jahmyr Gibbs to look like Barry Sanders reincarnated, it's just a really bad look. However, the offense, on the other hand, once again showed potential. And once again, it was a microcosm of the season. CeeDee got banged up. Pickens had some up and down moments with his effort and unbelievable plays. Dak looked, you know, shaky at times, but had some unbelievable throws. The Cowboys season's over. And as great as that offense was, as great of a wide receiver duo as George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb could be when CeeDee gets back, there's just simply no room for the Cowboys this season. And it's a really rough, it's unfortunate, because now you're going to have to pay Pickens, you're going to lose even more of that talent on defense, and I don't know what the Cowboys are going to look like next year because they don't have a ton of resources to improve. I'm excited to see what Dak and Pickens do just for fun the rest of the season, but in terms of playoffs, there are three teams right now in the wild card that have 8 or 9 wins. The Cowboys are 6-6-1. Their schedule is not easy the rest of the way either. So, I don't know. I don't see how the Cowboys find their way into the playoffs. I think it's done. I think that the Micah trade took all the steam out of the team. I think you wasted another year with Dak, and now you're just moving on. And they've been in this weird middle ground for years now. Now, on the flip side, a team that's not in this weird middle ground, a team that's been trending up the last few years, is the Detroit Lions. And this was a huge win. This was a must-win for Detroit. Because, as I mentioned, there are three teams right now in the wild card with 8 or 9 wins. The Lions had 7. So they've been playing catch-up the last few weeks. The Lions aren't used to this. They were the number one seed by far last year. They were in the running for it the year before. And this reestablished the culture that I think the Lions have been trying to set, which is big-time offense, make big-time plays, rely on the playmakers, and simply outgun you. You got to be a little concerned if you're thinking future for the Lions. Actually, I want to stay with this game, because Amon-Ra looked really good, even though he was banged up. Isaac Tesla had a great performance, had a huge touchdown. He is capable of making some spectacular catches, and the way they're using him confuses me a little bit. I would like to see him integrated into the offense a little more next season. They seem to really like Khalif Raymond, but the Lions have playmakers. Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery is still the best running back duo in the league. Jameson Williams, by the way, is proving like he could be a really good number one or a really good receiver. Like, he could be a number one on another team. So putting him with Amon-Ra, with Goff, who's able to read the field as well as he has, make the right decision. Jared Goff is a very underrated quarterback. And I think the Lions are very much live here in the NFC. Because now they're just a game back of some of these teams. And they play, you know, they've got a game versus the Bears at the end of the season that might end up being for the division, depending on what the Packers do. Looking at their schedule, though, this is why winning the game against the Cowboys was so important. Because if you lose to Dallas, they wouldn't be as dead in the water as the Cowboys are right now, but it would be pretty close. Because they've got the Rams, then the Steelers, then at the Vikings. The Vikings aren't great, but that's still a division game. And then home for the Bears in Week 18. That is really tough. There's no, you know, super easy game in there. You can argue the Vikings, but like I said, all road division games are difficult. Brian Flores is still a good defensive coordinator. I'm pulling for the Lions. They've kind of been America's team the last few seasons. They're very lovable. They're fun to watch. And the playoffs would be much better if they were in it, but they're going to have to run off, you know, a win streak here to end the season because, man, that schedule is not easy. And they're going to be bad. You know what? If they do get in, I do think they're dangerous because they're going to be battle-tested. And at least two other teams in the playoffs are going to be division opponents. Those games can go any way. The Eagles are kind of crashing. I don't know. I think Detroit is still alive. They were my pick to, I think, make the Super Bowl at the beginning of the season. And can't make the Super Bowl if you don't make the playoffs. So Lions got to get in. No, it was the Rams. I had the Rams making the Super Bowl. And the Rams, by the way, look great. We're going to talk about them a little later, but the Lions play the Rams next week. Matt Stafford is just unbelievable. They had a rough loss versus Carolina, but other than that, they have been clicking on all cylinders. This isn't a Rams topic. We're going to move on. Because another major story broke this week as well, which was Giannis's potential trade request. And this trade request is a little confusing the way it's been reported. Because people said he demanded one in the offseason. You had some reports saying that it came now. You had some reports saying he wanted to go to the Knicks. Some saying he wants to go to the Spurs. Pretty confusing. But the gist is, Giannis wants out. Regardless of how it happened, we know it. And if he is traded, I want to take a moment and acknowledge what he's done in Milwaukee. Because he is the greatest Buck of all time. He passed Kareem in points a few years ago, keep in mind. As great as Kareem was, he did a lot of his work with the Lakers. Giannis has been a Buck this whole time. He won a championship with them. He won multiple MVPs, Defensive Player of the Year. He turned that franchise into a contender for years. And he had a brief run as the best player in the world, which only about, you know, a dozen or so people have been able to do. So, good for Giannis. wherever he gets traded to, we'll talk about that in a second, they're going to have a chance to compete, and they're going to be acquiring one of the 20 greatest players in NBA history. All right, and back to Milwaukee. This is their fault, organizationally, because they have just made poor decision after poor decision with ever since Giannis won them that championship a few years ago against the Suns. Trading for the Damian Lillard trade was clearly a mistake, not just because he got hurt, but because it sucked the identity out of the team. You lost Jrue Holiday, which, like I said, that Bucks team was based on defense. And come playoff time, Jrue is a really good asset to have, especially more so than Dame. Because if you're playing Dame or you're playing Jrue, Drew's going to guard Dame. Dame can't guard Jrue. The Bucks just really messed it up. I mean, the team is so devout of talent. The Chris Middleton trade was not good. Kyle Kuzma is not a good running mate for Giannis. And he just has had no help over the last few years, and the Bucks have really been spiraling. I respect his decision to demand a trade. Milwaukee's 10-14 right now. Giannis should be competing. We should be watching Giannis Antetokounmpo play in April and May. We should not see his season ending, you know, in March. So, we're going to play a little game when we come back. We're going to play another brief PSA. It's going to be called Jan Yes or Jan No. And we're going to go through a bunch of teams in the league, see what they can offer Milwaukee, and talk about if it would be a good fit.
The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taz Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May and fall season from August to November.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
Stressed? Need to talk? Call Help Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland. Help Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP. Or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please, please help
me? All right, welcome back. You are listening to Winning Time on WMUC FM Radio here in College Park. We just did a segment on Giannis' trade request. He's the greatest Buck of all time. The organization has failed him, and now he's got a chance to go compete somewhere else. So, we're playing a game called Yanni Yes or Yanni No, starting with the San Antonio Spurs. And my answer is a big, fat Yanni Yes. Oh my goodness, think of what it would mean to see Giannis and Wemby play together. That defensive front court would be the greatest of all time, no question. As a front court in general, they would rival that of Duncan and Robinson. This would be an incredible trade. I would love to see it. The Spurs have assets. They've got a lot of picks still to trade. They've got some good young players. Devin Vassell, a bunch of other options. Stephon Castle, if you include him. And all of a sudden, you build around Wemby for the future and Giannis for the present. And oh my, I mean, the Spurs could rip off. That would be, they'd be the favorite to win the championship. I think it would be them and the Thunder. I don't know how you beat two Goliaths like that, unless you have an all-time great team like OKC. Speaking of OKC, I'm giving them a Yanni no. The Oklahoma City Thunder, oh my gosh, I could not afford to see them pick up Giannis. Of course they have every asset to and could make the best trade to because they've got 12 great players who are all young. You could trade Chet. You could trade a collection of your bench or other pieces, Jalen Williams. I don't know if the Thunder would want to blow up that core because they just won a title and are having a historic season, but they would be able to offer the best package for Giannis without question. The Heat, I'm giving it a Yanni yes, because Miami would know how to build around him. And if you're just talking about this season, like if it's a midseason trade, who, you know, how does it go? Then I don't think Miami's the best fit. I also don't think Miami's going to be able to offer the best package because I think the only way that they get Giannis is if they trade Bam. And we know Miami doesn't want to trade Bam. They'd much rather pair him with Giannis. And I simply don't. We've seen at this point, Tyler Hero can't be the centerpiece of a deal for a superstar. No team is going to actually accept that. So I don't think Miami's a realistic destination. We know that they've been saving up for him. Assets-wise, you've got Jamie Jacquez Jr., Nikola Jovic, Khalil Ware, a lot of solid young guys, and a few first-round picks still to deal with, but I don't think that's where he's going to end up. As much as I would love to see it as a Heat fan, put him with Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley, I mean, my goodness, that would be, you know, a fun sight. All right, the New York Knicks. This one's the most interesting because a lot of the reporting has been that when Giannis supposedly asked for a trade in the offseason, it was because he really wanted to be a Knick. And it's interesting on the Knicks' end because obviously they need another superstar. Obviously they would want to make this trade. All the fans would be clamoring for it. You pair Giannis with Jalen Brunson. Maybe Kat, all of a sudden, you know, you've got a real championship contender out there in the East. I just don't think that it's going to go through. I don't think the Bucks want to make a deal with the Knicks. And I don't think the Knicks can offer enough to Milwaukee to make it worth their while. Because a lot of what the Knicks would offer are win-now guys. You know, like OG Anunoby or Mikal Bridges, one of them. Maybe even Karl Anthony Towns. Those are guys that you would want on your roster if you're trying to compete or if you're trying to make more deals. And Milwaukee, if you trade Giannis, is trying to tank. I think they would prefer a deal with younger players and a little more picks than a couple good players and less picks. That's my take. And the last team I've got is the Houston Rockets. This one, I think they can... This was interesting as well. Because this was talked about after the KD trade last year, or after the KD trade this offseason. People said that Houston kept food on their plate after the KD trade in terms of picks, young players, to where they can still go make a trade specifically for Giannis. And that specifically would be Alperen Sengun. This is a tough decision for the Rockets because Sengun is their future. He's the reason that they were the 2 seed last year. He's their maybe their best player right now. Definitely their best player other than KD. But if you're trading for Giannis, you would have to include him. This would be a very good deal for Milwaukee, and this would honestly probably be the one that I would recommend most for their sake. Because trading Giannis for pieces is one thing. That involves a long process. But trading Giannis for pieces and Sengun allows you to have a real foundation for a rebuild. Sengun now becomes your franchise guy. I think that would be a great trade for Milwaukee. Pairing Giannis with KD would be spectacular. It would be amazing to watch. I think that's the best thing that would happen. If he gets dealt, I'm hoping he goes to Houston. All right, we're about halfway through the first hour of our show. We're going to switch the focus back to the NFL. So, speaking of all-time great players, you know, Giannis, KD, Patrick Mahomes is having a mediocre season. Not from his perspective. He's playing great, but the Chiefs, as a winning franchise, are very mediocre. They find themselves at 6-6 after losing to Dallas last week, and things seem to be falling apart a bit for them, especially with the rest of the AFC seeming to have more and more contenders in their tier. That game against the Cowboys was not great. And the Chiefs are in a bad spot for this reason. Normally, every season, you say, okay, you've got Patrick Mahomes, you've got Andy Reid, you've got Travis Kelce, that should be enough. Well, Travis Kelce is getting older. Andy Reid is getting older. And it's getting to the point where the rest, that's not just enough to win anymore. There are some real problems with this Chiefs team and this Chiefs roster that are being covered up by the theatrics and the work of Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to explain what I mean by that. The offensive line has been injured at multiple positions throughout the season. They've had new starters nearly every week on the offensive line. Rashee Rice was out the first 6 weeks of the season. The offense never got into a tempo. And then when he came back, they had to switch things up, and Xavier Worthy got hurt. Both of their running backs have gotten hurt. And it's not long-term stuff, it's not truly serious stuff, but it's stuff that destabilizes this franchise and this offense. Granted, Mahomes has still managed to make the offense look great. They're putting up points in the high 20s nearly every week. Mahomes is making spectacular plays like it's 2018 again. And the Chiefs are exciting to watch on offense. The problem is the defense is terrible. And Spags is a great defensive coordinator in the playoffs. He's a great defensive coordinator in big moments. But for whatever reason, this season, he's not getting the most out of his guys. Trent McDuffie has taken a big step back from last year. Jalen Watson has not been the same level of player that he has been in years past. The Chiefs had two shutdown corners last year. This year, they've got their secondary just doesn't look good on Sundays. They get beat deep. They get beat over the middle. When you have that kind of situation and that kind of difficulty on the defensive side of things, it's very difficult to overcome, especially in a league with so much parity right now, especially at the top. And this has been what we've seen from the Chiefs over the last several games. We saw it versus the Cowboys, even versus the Colts being taken to overtime. Granted, the Colts are a good team, but there were problems with the offensive line. The defense couldn't get a stop in key moments. Same situation with the Broncos the week before. Defense couldn't get a stop in key moments. If the Chiefs are going to make the playoffs this year, and they're going to go on a run, they need to fix these issues. And it starts with coaching. Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo need to get their things together. They need to figure this out. Because the Chiefs have talent. We've seen this team go to 3 straight Super Bowls. They shouldn't be falling off the wagon this early. The Cowboys game this week was particularly important with Mahomes because it was the third time in his career, that he had orchestrated a fourth quarter comeback and then lost anyway. I'll explain further. 3 times this season, Mahomes, you know, was trailing in the fourth, came back to take the lead, and then his team ended up losing that game. That didn't happen to Tom Brady for the third time in his career until his 15th season. It's happened to Mahomes 3 times already this year. It took Brady 15 years for that to have happened for a third time throughout his career. So that is a testament to the issues this team is showing. It You cannot be blowing games like this in the fourth quarter. The Chiefs are supposed to be known for being composed, being disciplined at the end of the game in big spots. That's when they come through. That's when they make the right play. That's when they make the big play. That's not what they've been this year. And it's almost the reverse of last season. When they went 16-1 in the games that Mahomes played. And a lot of them were by one score. It was, I think it was 11 one-score games. It was, you know, chicanery at the end, but the Chiefs were always coming out on top. This year, it's been the other way around. Bo Nix scrambling deep, getting the first down, and then kicking the field goal to win the game. The Cowboys coming back at the end. It's just bad luck for Kansas City, and this season does not seem to be their year. Their next upcoming schedule, they've got the Texans on Sunday night this week, and that game is really for their lives. If they lose to Houston, their season's probably over, because they're competing with Houston to make the playoffs. You can't give them that tiebreaker, because they don't have the tiebreaker against most of these other teams they're competing against, and this is a huge chance to put another loss on the Texans' record. The Chiefs are in a tight race. After the Texans, they've got the Chargers, which is another team in their class fighting for the playoffs. Then the Titans, then Denver again, and then the Raiders. So two easy games in there, three very difficult games, and the Chiefs likely have to run the table to make the playoffs. I believe that they can do it because, as I've said time and time again, I don't bet against Mahomes. Despite the problems that the Chiefs have had so far, I don't think that Mahomes is going to lose and miss the playoffs right now with this team. He's got Rashee Rice. He's got Kelsey. He's still got Andy Reid. And we were talking about Mahomes trying to stack championships. You can't miss the playoffs in the middle of your prime like this. You just can't. All right. Moving on. We are going to shift the gears a little bit to our award races because we are almost done with this NFL season. Makes me sad, at least the regular season. I absolutely love football. You've got to appreciate it every single Sunday. And awards mean something. So it's tight races so far, but we're going to start at the bottom and work our way to the top. My coach of the year is Mike McDonald. I know he's not the favorite. People want to give it to Ben Johnson. People want to give it to Mike Vrabel. But what Mike McDonald has done with this Seattle team is truly exceptional. Turning Sam Darnold into, well, translating what he got from Kevin O'Connell and keeping Sam Darnold as a franchise quarterback when a lot of people were concerned that it wasn't a great idea is exceptional. What he's done with this offense, he creates a unique choice offense that makes it extremely hard for defenses to predict. Defensive Rookie of the Year, Carson Schwesinger. Also out of Seattle. He's been kind of quiet this season, but he's the heavy favorite. Don't need to get too much into him. Offensive Rookie of the Year, Jackson Dart. He's not the favorite right now. It's Tet McMillan, but I think you give Dart these last few weeks. You give him Wandale. You give him Slayton and Hodgins. I think he's going to turn it around. He has highlight plays every single week. He's an exceptional quarterback. He's got to learn how to slide because he's running like Cam Scadaboo right now. But as long as he finishes the season healthy, makes highlight play after highlight play like we know he can, he's going to be the Offensive Rookie of the Year. Defensive Player of the Year, this one, not even close. Myles Garrett. He has had one of the most unstoppable seasons we've seen from a defensive lineman. It's multiple sacks every week, it feels like. He's wrecking games, making big plays. He is just truly unbelievable, and he's having an unbelievable season. Offensive Player of the Year. This one is, I think, the tightest race of any of them right now. Because it's either Jaxon Smith-Njigba, or it's Jonathan Taylor. And I am going to give it to Jonathan Taylor. By a hair. By a hair. JSN is having one of the best seasons from a receiver ever. He's pacing for 2,000 yards. If he gets to 2,000, maybe that changes things. But Jonathan Taylor is the driving force of this Colts team. I love Daniel Jones. He had a really great start to the season. He hasn't been looking like, you know, that version of himself recently. But Jonathan Taylor putting the team on his back, being able to run against any defense in the league. He's only had one, you know, mediocre game this season. I think it's got to be JT. And that leaves the MVP race. Drake May or Matthew Stafford? You know, a week ago, I was on Team Stafford. His stats were unbelievable. And then he lost and got outdueled by Bryce Young and the Panthers. So my MVP as of today is Drake May. And it's incredibly exciting to have him be in this position because he is so beloved by fans. He's just such a fun player to watch. He makes throws all over the field. He's got a deep ball highlight reel about 4 minutes long of just deep throws and unbelievable cross-body plays on the run. He can scramble as well. The Patriots are having their best season by far since Brady left. He's the reason why. And when you have a franchise quarterback like him, you know, everything just starts to click. It's a trend we've seen recently. These teams, you know, last year, the Patriots and the Bears, struggling a lot, had their rookie quarterback who showed flashes, but were losing a lot of games because of coaching and defense and not a lot of support for him. And now this year they fixed the situation and they're both the number one seed. I think that's what might happen with Jackson Dart and the Giants, but, you know, we'll see about that. But yeah, Drake May, MVP right now. He absolutely would have earned it, and the fans would be so stoked if he got it. All right, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to do our MVP awards, or our award picks for the NBA, and then start to move forwards. So we'll be right back with you after this.
When might you be buying?
Community Forklift is a nonprofit secondhand store for home goods and building materials. Shop sustainably for low-cost modern and vintage furniture, art, lumber, hardware, and more for your home or project. Moving out? Consider donating your reusable materials. Community Forklift is located 10 minutes from College Park down Route 1 in Hyattsville. Follow Community Forklift on Instagram to see the latest thrifted finds and visit www.communityforklift.org for salvage store hours.
All right, welcome back in. Some unfortunate news here today. Normally, we go from 4 to 6. We're going to have to end a little bit early today. Something came up that we're going to have to deal with. But for now, we're still live. We've still got a lot of stuff to talk about. So, award races in the NBA. These are predictions. It is still very early in the season. But my MVP pick is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think he's going to repeat. And I think it should be unanimous by the end of the year. When you have a team like the Thunder, who are winning as many games as they are the way that they are, blowing teams out to the point where they don't even have to really play the fourth quarter, that is dominance. Steph Curry in 2016 was the unanimous MVP. Jordan in 96 was the MVP. When you have a team that wins as many games as the Thunder are going to, they have the MVP. Especially when their best player is averaging 33, 7 assists, 4 rebounds. He's a spectacular player, a great defender. Should be him. Defensive player of the year, Victor Wembanyama. He needs to come back and be healthy and be eligible for these awards, but if he is, he's still by far the best defensive player in the league. His defensive gravity forcing teams to, you know, redirect their shots, change their selection. Just, you have to scheme around him as a defender, which you very rarely have to do in the NBA. It's unique. It's what makes him dominant. He's a defensive player of the year. And rookie of the year, Cooper Flagg. Look, he's having one of the best seasons for an 18-year-old ever. He's having a great rookie season as well. He's putting up solid numbers, 17 points. He's got to work on his efficiency, but he's been really good on the defensive end. And you can tell the ceiling is there. He has been electric on both ends. Cooper Flagg with the Mavericks, the Luka replacement, as he's supposed to be. He's got a long way to go, but rookie there would be a good start. I want to shout out Derek Queen as well, who, you know, rookie on the Pelicans, out of Maryland, five-star recruit when he got here. He's beloved in the DMV area and becoming beloved in New Orleans because he's playing really well. His playmaking ability has been noticed by even Nikola Jokic. So very exciting to see this young class develop. All right, we're going to move into a topic or a segment that I like to call high-speed headlines. This is where I'm setting a timer for 8 to 10 minutes, and I've got it's 8 minutes, 8 topics. We're going to fly through it, going to have to move quick, try to keep up. A lot of sports news to cover, starting with some national championship games. Bama, Georgia play. They're actually playing right now. I think Alabama's going to win. They tend to win these big games, but I want to just appreciate the rivalry that we have here in the SEC because these two teams once again being in the championship after all the drama that's happened over the last year or so, just remarkable. That's how a program bounces back. That's called being established. That's called having good foundation. Indiana, OSU tonight. Look, Indiana's had a great run. OSU is unstoppable. Nobody in the country can guard Jeremiah Smith, and that defense is just, I mean, they are so hard to play against. They cannot move the ball. Fernando Mendoza, spectacular talent. Huge moment for him. I think he's going to be great, but OSU just, I mean, man, I don't know how you beat this team. Lane Kiffin leaves Ole Miss in the middle of the season to go join LSU. This move is ridiculous. It is disrespectful, and it's absolutely atrocious, and I have no respect for Lane Kiffin for it at all. Lane Kiffin has spent his entire career pretty much building up to this season. Ole Miss is playing in big games, they're highly ranked, and his recruits are playing well. You cannot leave them. You can talk about it from a business perspective all you want. I don't really care. Is LSU going to give him more donors? Is it going to give him more sponsorships, more resources? Whatever. Lane Kiffin made promises to all of these kids on Ole Miss. All of them. He recruited them. He trained them. And in the middle of the season, he quit on them. I have no respect for it. Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh on the hot seat. This is someone I do have respect for. And if Mike Tomlin gets fired in Pittsburgh, I would love to have him in New York. He's going to get scooped up pretty quickly wherever he wants. He's a great head coach. He hasn't had a losing season in nearly 20 years. It's been 18 seasons. But if you're a franchise that wants to win, mediocrity isn't good enough. Winning seasons isn't good enough. And we haven't seen Pittsburgh win a playoff game in many years. So if they move on from him, at this point I would understand. But man, he's a great coach, just an unfortunate situation. Justin Jefferson may be done with the Vikings franchise given their current QB situation. Man, I was excited to see Max Brosner play. He was awful. I mean, truly awful. First QB with 4+ interceptions and a half since Nathan Peterman. So that's the company he's in. Jeddah's might be demanding a trade this offseason. I would love to see a team acquire him. You know, New England could be offering for him, or a team, something I want to float, you know, a team like the Giants. See what you can get for the second pick for Justin Jefferson. Vikings get to get their QB of the future. Giants give Jackson Dart another receiver. It's not going to happen. Something I've thought about. But the real story here is a future Hall of Famer is going to be done with this team, and whoever acquires Justin Jefferson is going to be very lucky. And the Vikings finding a way to squander his prime and possibly lose him this offseason, it's really hard to bounce back from that. And the way that they've bungled this QB situation is pretty embarrassing. Giving up Sam Darnold, who now looks great, and now being stuck with J.J. McCarthy. Just a bad look. James Harden, save us, trending on Twitter and social media and everywhere. Let me explain the situation. The Oklahoma City Thunder are pacing to break the 73-win record. They're 22-1. They just got back another All-NBA player from injury who missed the whole season, so they're getting even better. This is one of the greatest draft classes the NBA has seen in a while. And the Thunder own the Clippers' first-round pick. The Clippers are awful. That means that the future of the NBA is in the hands of James Harden, the Clippers' last best player. If he manages to make the Clippers competitive, every time the Clippers win, that pick gets worse and worse. And nobody in the NBA world wants to see the Thunder with a top three pick this offseason after winning 75 games. That would just be a disaster. Vijay Ejikom has a game winner against the Golden State Warriors. That was a great game. He's had an unbelievable season. And that was just a spectacular play. Catching Maxey's miss, putting it back up, and then him and Maxey sprinting full speed back down the court to get the block. Just an electric moment. Very, very exciting. He's a great player. Another great rookie here in the NBA. Jahmyr Gibbs breaks Barry Sanders' record for most touchdowns before the age of 24. Jahmyr Gibbs is a future Hall of Famer. I'm going to say it right now. He is three seasons into his career. He has been dynamic and a superstar every single one of them. He is in a situation with the Lions where they're going to get production out of him. We've seen great talents with the Lions before. Only thing is, you hope this time comes with a little more winning. Last, World Cup schedule released. Game's going to be played in Seattle and hosted in the United States. Very excited for it. The World Cup, the one in 2022, I mean, that was one of the greatest sports moments I've ever seen. Messi and Mbappe. I'm excited to see what this World Cup brings. Hopefully the U.S. can be a little more competitive, but all very exciting. All right, we've kind of flew through those headlines, to be honest. We still have 9 minutes left in today's show. As I mentioned, unfortunately, we are ending at 5 rather than 6. So we're going to move into Wins Winners, which is my weekly segment. We're going to move into Wins Winners, as I mentioned. I'm giving you 5 NFL games, 5 picks. You can trust them. Take them with your life. I guarantee you that these come through. Starting on the Sunday night game, Chiefs over Texans straight up. There's no way that the Chiefs lose this game. There's simply no way. Their season is on the line. They've lost 3 out of 4 in embarrassing fashion. And they are going to win. That's what the Chiefs do. They've had problems all year, but you're getting Mahomes, Andy Reid in a room. I just don't see this. They're going to find a way to beat this Texans defense because that's what the Chiefs do, and it's going to fall on C.J. Stroud to match them. I don't think he's going to be able to. This is going to be high scoring for the Chiefs, and I don't think that the Texans offense can match that pace. I think the Chiefs turn it around. I think that the Chiefs win and possibly start the winning streak that gets them into the playoffs. Next, Bengals +6 at the Bills. I don't understand why this line is 6 points. That feels like a lot, especially when we just saw the Bengals, you know, blow out Baltimore. That defense, when Joe Burrow is playing, clicks. This is real, guys. When quarterbacks come back, like people, I have a lot of friends who are Commanders fans. I keep saying, don't worry, Jaden Daniels is going to be back next season. They say, yeah, that's not the problem. We're going to be bad anyway. Quarterbacks change everything. A good quarterback changes the locker room. It changes who the defense or who the whole team is listening to and looking to every single day. When the quarterback is confident, that instills confidence in the rest of the team. These little things matter. Joe Burrow being there, having longer offensive drives and more successful offensive drives takes the pressure off the defense. There's less expectation for them. This stuff does matter. I think the Bengals are definitely covering versus the Bills. They're alive to beat the Bills. But I'll take the 6 points happily. Josh Allen and the Bills, they're having a very good season so far, a very Josh Allen season. This is just another classic matchup. I expect that we're going to get both Allen and Burrow's best. So just sit back and enjoy it 1 o'clock on Sunday. Next, Jaguars +1.5 versus the Colts. Picking this game broke my heart because I really, really want the Colts not only to make the playoffs, but to win the division, maybe even fight the Pats for that first overall seed. But it's not where we're headed. And if I were to tell you about a team led by Daniel Jones, superstar running back, had a really great start to the season, didn't lose a lot of games, and seemed to have a bit of a miraculous team of destiny feel to them, only for it to come falling through towards the end of the season, I'd be talking about the 2022 New York Giants as much as I'm talking about this team. And that Giants team found themselves barely getting in, having a great wild card performance, and then getting beat badly. We'll see what this future has for the Colts. The Jaguars have been on a heater recently, winning multiple games in a row by 3 or 4 scores. I think the Jaguars do win this one, and the Colts continue to fall off. Next, Steelers +6 at the Ravens. Mike Tomlin's on the hot seat, apparently. He's going to cover versus a division rival. The Ravens just lost badly to Cincinnati. This is a huge game. I do think the Ravens win, but it's going to be close. Lamar historically does not play great versus the Steelers. I think he struggles a little bit. However, I don't think that the Steelers quarterback is necessarily the guy to make a big play right now either. So I think it's close. I think it's low scoring, as every Steelers-Ravens game seems to be. It's going to be physical. I'm going to take the Ravens to win, Steelers to cover. And lastly, Bears +7 at the Packers. I apologize if it's the case. Maybe there's some reporting that I'm missing, but I don't know why the Bears would be 7-point underdogs against Green Bay. They're the one seed right now. They've been playing great. They just had a huge win against the Eagles. They're on extended rest. I'm just surprised. I think that the Bears have a real chance to win this game. In fact, I'm picking them to win this game because it's classic Packers to, you know, have a big game on Thanksgiving and then fall apart the next week. They lost to the Browns this season. They've lost to some pretty bad teams. And now you have a game against a division rival with the division on the line, by the way. There's a lot of pressure here. That's not usually where the Packers do their best. The Bears have been playing amazing. I think that they win. And I think they absolutely cover the +7. Bengals +6. A Bengals and Steelers money line this week would be a great look. All right, those are my picks. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes here left in the show. And I want to tell you guys a story, and I'm going to connect it back to the top of the show. Because we started talking with LeBron's point streak. And I was heading home from a meeting the other day, and it was freezing out, so I decided to call an Uber. And when I got in, this gentleman who picked me up, his front seat was dressed as Kobe Bryant. He had a Kobe jersey on, he had a hat. And we just talked about sports for the entire drive home. We debated LeBron versus Kobe, because I'm a LeBron guy, he was clearly a Kobe guy. And the conversation was so fascinating. And it reminds me a lot of how this streak ended. Because, you know, people have debated LeBron versus Kobe, LeBron versus Jordan for years, and the debates are usually pretty similar because Kobe and Jordan stylistically are pretty similar. When the game is on the line and your best player has the ball in his hands, don't you want him to just take the shot? And that's kind of what the Uber driver was telling me. That is what I've talked about with a lot of different friends. Kobe and Michael Jordan take the shot. In that moment that LeBron was in, they would absolutely be shooting that ball. That's not who LeBron is. He makes the right play. He trusts his teammates. And the reason that I think LeBron is the GOAT, the reason that I think he's better than both Kobe and Michael, is because he understands the game at a level higher than anyone else. We've heard stories of his opponents in the playoffs talking about, yeah, he knew our play before it happened. Or my favorite one is, he came up to me and said, hey, you're standing in the wrong spot for your team's play. I mean, some of these stories are ridiculous. And then you pair that decision-making, being the guy to say, I trust my teammates, I trust our game plan, we're going to win this game as a team, paired with the longevity is what makes him the GOAT. as I mentioned at the beginning, passing it out to Rui for the game winner, giving up the streak of 1,300 games double digits.